This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Welcome to the Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. The pandemic has hurt many but also given a boost to others, and one of the winners has been GHL Systems, with the stock up 106% year to date. GHL is a one-stop e-payment solution provider that processed 8.1 billion ringgit in transactions for the first half of 2020. That's a 31% rise on year. With its existing entrenchment in the payment system, GHL is looking at other areas of the digital economy that it can tap into and monetize. With all that in mind, is this a company you should be adding to your watch list or even portfolio? To find out, I'm speaking with Danny Leong, CEO of GHL Systems. Danny, welcome to the Breakfast Grill.
Morning, Roshan. Thanks for having me.
So let's take a look at your numbers. You had a nice third quarter, all things considered. Revenue was up 5% on year, but profit before tax was up 58% on year to 17 million ringgit. That gives you a rough operating profit margin of around 18.6%. That's in line with margins from the last few financial years, but a dip from last year's 20.21% gross profit margin there. When should we expect you to restore that margin, or was last year simply a blip in the scheme of things?
Basically, our business has a few contributors for revenue, right? Largely speaking, it's actually from a transaction payment acquisition business, where we provide payment acceptance to the merchants, as well as our, what I call traditional business, the solution services and the shared service business, where we actually rent terminals, sell terminals, etc., to the banks. So our margins do vary from quarter to quarter because of the variation in terms of the revenue contribution coming from these two large portfolios. To answer your question, we pride ourselves in building traditional-based business, right? Of course, if you get a lumpy project-based project selling terminals to bank, of course, we'll take it as well. But we actually do focus on the transaction payment business.
Right. In general, on an annualized basis, then, is a 20-21% operating profit margin the goal, or are you looking at something below that, just around the 18% mark?
In general, probably in the short term, probably be around there. But in the long term, I believe it would be better. Why? Because we are our business is transaction based, which is a scale based business. As you scale transaction more, my OPEX actually can be a bit more contained. So in the short term, yeah, probably around those region. But in the longer term, I would expect it to be improving.
You mentioned a few of your core business segments there. TPA, which is Transaction Payment Acquisition, and the Shared Services. Now, TPA is your biggest revenue generator, I think bringing in about 58% of revenue based on Q3 numbers. Now, this is the product that allows merchants to accept payments from a variety of methods. Now, despite the promising growth of cashless payments, GHL's blended merchant discount rate, or the MDR, has been facing downward pressure over the last few years and is now reportedly around 0.7 to 1%. Is this solely due to the competition from e-wallets that offer lower MDRs?
It's a combination of a lot of factors, right? E-wallet actually offers slightly lower MDR, right? But again, our speed, we're trying to maintain our speed to be similar to the card payments. The contributing factors are typically, because we are operating in three main countries, Malaysia, Thailand, Philippines. So it varies from, so you get a variation in terms of country, in terms of MDR income and stuff like this, as well as you get variation in terms of the what we call payment scheme, whether it's a debit card, a credit card, or e-wallet, that kind of variation. And actually, of late, we have actually another variation. We started this whole journey back in 2015 to acquire small merchants where the banks do not serve, right? The banks usually serve the big merchants, the chain store merchants, etc. But with the arrival of e-wallets, and also in Malaysia and our prominence in the market, of late, especially this year, we have actually been acquiring big merchants as well, right? So you heard about our partnership with HSBC in Malaysia, where we actually help HSBC to provide payment acceptance services for their very, very large merchants. And when you deal with large merchants, naturally, they will give you the big volume. And naturally, they will, of course, ask for a better MDR. So these are all the variations that comes in to the calculation of our net MDR. But to us, it's a volume game business, right? So we actually don't mind. And we will continue to push our volume up and taking in merchants from tier 1 all the way up to tier 5 or tier 6.
GHL has, I think, a total of 392,000 total acceptance points regionally, which is up 5% on year. And on the back of the pandemic, GHL has noted that it's seeing a change in the merchant and product mix. Is that the product and merchant mix that you were talking about?
Yes, exactly. I mean, we started the journey in 2015 to serve the unserved merchants, the smaller tier merchants, the tier 3, tier 4, tier 5. But now we actually see opportunity to do the tier 1 and tier 2 merchants as well.
Like, I think as you mentioned here, when it comes to the bigger merchants, whether it's Tesco or Watson's, the ones with large volumes, essentially, they get better MDRs because of their size and their scale, because you want that volume into your own books. How important are big chains like this to your revenue? What's the ballpark percentage revenue contribution?
I don't have the exact number. If I were to guess, it's probably about 50 to 60%. And how important are they? Of course, they're important.
So you're moving away from the focus on the smaller merchants, which you started a few years back. But some analysts do note that, you know, the tier 3, tier 4 merchants represent, are one, underserved by banks, and two, make up a huge portion of the market, 70-80% by some estimates. Are you still going to be focusing on this, or is the focus going to be more on trying to get the big chains and the high volume merchants?
No, we are actually focusing on both. We are still continuing to focus on the small merchants. Okay. Frankly, the big merchants was an opportunity that was presented to us. And then as we build our payment portfolio, more and more big merchants are looking at us, but our strategy doesn't change. We will still focus on the small merchant because it's big, like you say, right? It's huge. Malaysia, I think, reported 800 to 900,000 SMEs to cover, right? So we will always focus on the small merchant. But of course, now we have a separate team just to focus on the bigger merchant.
Now, recently, you know, when we talk about your businesses, you've recently gotten into the money lending business as well. And most recently, this was in the Philippines. That's your third market after Malaysia and Thailand. GHL wants to do this, wants this to contribute, I think, 20 to 30% of revenue by the second half of 2021. At this juncture, though, Danny, how much does this business contribute to revenue?
At this juncture, unfortunately, with the pandemic, what happened back in March when everything kind of got exploded and all, we actually stopped this lending business, right? We were actually piloted in Malaysia and Thailand back in January, and Philippines, we haven't started yet. So back in March, when things were bad, we wanted to preserve cash, right? To me, it's the right decision. So we actually stopped our lending business, stopped pilot, right? But with the results that came out in Q3, we have actually restarted the engine for lending, especially in Malaysia and Thailand. And we are planning to go back out to the market probably towards the end of this month or early December. And the Philippines will probably start piloting towards the end of December. So yes, this is an important part of our strategy. Reason why? Because we are serving the small merchants, and the small merchants, you know, do not have, always have access to funds to grow, right? So the idea is actually to help them to grow and help them to convert to cashless payment. And along the way, we will help them grow, not only for lending, as part of our Grow by GHL product suite, our financial supermarket. We will also be providing them micro insurance, micro wealth management, anything that, in our view, that can help a small merchant to grow. So net-net, this is a very core part of our strategy. We do see that being a good contributor to the overall revenue base, and more importantly, we definitely gonna get better margins with the lending business or even with the insurance businesses.
Yeah, I want to touch on the financial supermarket in just a second, but right now, since you mentioned margins, gross margins in Q3 was around 42%, in line with the annual numbers for the last three financial years. So with this money lending and the future businesses that could stem out of this, can we expect the margins to expand over the next few years, and by how many percentage points?
I don't have the exact number in mind, but it's definitely going to improve it because it's very simple, right? Our lending rates out are at least 12 to 18%. Insurance, we usually get 8 to 15%. So those numbers, and compared to our MDR income and all, would definitely help to improve our margins.
Yeah, because those are much bigger margins compared to your pillar businesses right now. So are we talking about gross margins going towards the 50% mark here, or are you more optimistic than that?
I mean, in the near future, probably around towards 50%. It's all down to the balance of how what's the percentage of the revenue, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say I probably can improve to 50% easily.
Now, when we talk about these kind of services, these kind of financial services, now when a bank would normally use a credit score or something along those lines to determine the creditworthiness of a merchant or a business before they hand out a loan, you've got a much richer source of data. You've got live sales data from your merchants. And this is something we've heard from the e-wallet players as well, whether it's Boost or even the likes of earlier this year, I spoke to Touch & Go e-wallet. And these are all the different things they're talking about, right? Essentially, with more merchants under your umbrella, you can then sell other products. I think this is something you mentioned as well. So what are the other products that you're looking at? You know, insurance, you mentioned that, but beyond that, what are you looking at any other financial services to add to that quote unquote financial supermarket you mentioned earlier?
At the moment, what we see is we see micro lending, micro insurance, and micro wealth management, as far as financial is concerned. But the other part of growth is actually also touching on some of the not so financial related, let's say order fulfillment, to help merchants to buy things through a digital network that quote unquote bypasses a distributor. Right? That would help the principal as well as making it cheaper for the merchant. So there are a lot of all these other ideas that we have that we will put in place because we have the terminal, which is now Android based primarily at the merchant end. So once you have like a smart terminal, in there you can do a lot more things than the traditional terminals.
Right. So essentially, you're creating this merchant ecosystem. And once you get the merchants in, then you try and upsell them on on the variety of products there. And basically, a full suite of solutions for merchants. Is that the end goal for GHL? Do you see that in mind? Or at least the current goal?
Definitely. For myself, I learned it from the telco guys, right? When you put a pipe into a house or a business, what else can you sell to them, right? It's the same premise. And the idea of us is actually to really to help them, the small merchant, to grow. Because in theory, the more they grow, the more cashless payment they will consume with me and transact with us, right? So my traditional business of a TPA will inherently grow as well as the small merchant's business grow.
Do you have aspirations to become a digital bank, whether as part of a consortium or on your own?
We have kind of decided not to apply on our own, right? But we are in discussion with our potential partners in terms of either collaboration or partnership.
I've been speaking with Danny Leong, CEO of GHL Systems. Up next, a look at their expansion plans, possible acquisitions, and their stock price. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking with Danny Leong, CEO of GHL Systems, one of the winners from the COVID-19 pandemic. Danny, let's take a look at the markets under your purview right now. Malaysia is your biggest market, contributing 78% of revenue, followed by the Philippines at 12% and Thailand at just 10% right now. While Malaysia is your biggest revenue generator, its population pales in comparison to the likes of Philippines or Thailand. So with that in mind, what do you consider to be your most valuable market in the long term?
Very good question. Philippines is definitely a very, very crucial market to us. The other market that we started exploring this year, beginning of this year, is actually Indonesia, right? And it's obvious why. These are the two biggest countries in terms of population. And in terms of cash, adoption is so high that the opportunity is definitely there. So we will continue to focus on these two countries aside from Malaysia. Malaysia being a home ground, actually, like most other companies, home ground tend to be very strong as well. And we tend to pilot things in Malaysia, like with our lending as well as insurance. We pilot in Malaysia, get it right, then we'll deploy to the other countries. That will always be our strategy. Yes, you're right. Philippines and Indonesia are definitely a key market for us.
What's the progress like in Indonesia at this point? Because this is, I guess you mentioned, the new market that you're entering in.
Yeah, sadly not very good this year, and purely because of the pandemic. Because we actually wanted to, we just planned to do merchant acquisition for the offline merchants beginning of this year. We started it, And because of the lockdowns and stuff like this, things have been stuck and stopped and has not been brilliant in Indonesia. But nevertheless, we believe that the lockdown will end some point in time. What the team is doing now is actually setting up collaborations with a lot of non-bank or non-payment banks, payment acquiring banks, as well as other partners. Because in Indonesia, you need to work smart. You need to work through partners rather than having 2,000 people walking the streets and getting merchants, right? Because it's a big country. So our strategy is always going to work through partners. There's enough to share in terms of the MDR income. And that's the only way we feel that it's going to be cost effective to reach out to the entire Indonesia. So we probably when things get unlocked, so to speak, we are looking at least 20 to 30 partners that we work with throughout Indonesia to actually expedite the merchant acquisition growth.
Now, when we talk about expansion plans and also partnerships, what comes to mind is the venture that GHL did in Cambodia through an acquisition in 2018. Now, that investment was written off earlier this year. There was a 9.6 million ringgit write-off that dragged GHL into a net loss of about 4.5 million ringgit or thereabouts. Danny, could you tell us what went wrong with the Cambodia acquisition?
Okay, basically, first of all, the write-down is that purely a accounting prudent practice, as we all know, right? Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the Cambodia market. We went in Cambodia market in 2018 because they were very strong with the what I call the Chinese money. Yeah, Cambodia has become so because of the One Belt One Road has become such a big important country for China. So you see a lot of Chinese investment in there back in 2018. Tourists a bit, but a lot of people are literally working there in Siam Reap or Phnom Penh or Sihanoukville, right? However, come pandemic beginning of this year, we actually see a lot of the Chinese investors actually kind of slow down or pull back, right? And a lot. So there's no quote-unquote Chinese money now, not that much in Cambodia. With that, that's why we took a step back to scale down in operations, which we did. As well as to take the prudent step of just to write down the investment.
The write-off is essentially an accounting practice. And Q2, in this quarter in particular, was also one of the worst quarters, I think, for most businesses. So was this part of a kitchen sinking exercise then, considering the different factors at play?
Yeah, you can say that it's basically what everybody would have done, right? So, but more importantly to me is operationally, minus all this accounting treatment, operationally we're actually doing very well compared to last year.
Right. And, you know, acquisitions aren't unfamiliar to GHL. This is something that's happened over the years. Even the way the business has been built over the last few years has been also through mergers and acquisitions. Are you looking at any other M&As in the next 12 months?
M&A, we always look at M&A, right? At least with one eye, right? And that's when my shareholders, my private equity shareholders actually come to play and help us a lot with it because they have people knocking on their doors and stuff like this, right? So we will always look at M&A. Having said that, we are also very, very cautious in making M&A decisions because we don't want a deal that would drag the whole group down, etc. So we tend to be, you can say, we open our eyes to see a lot of deals, but we are very selective in what deals we actually commit ourselves into. Back to your question, whether anything will happen in the next 12 months? Possible. Anything is possible.
Have more people been knocking on doors recently, especially with the way the market has played out?
Yes, definitely. But also you get a bit more cautious given the market situation.
Well, something that's not very cautious right now is if you take a look at your stock price, Danny, it's doubled year to date and you're trading at around 65 times PE based on full year forecasted earnings, which some analysts consider to be frothy. So are you going to be able to justify this valuation or has the market gotten ahead of itself?
I think we're undervalued, to be frank. Based on our Q3 results, right? Because once you extrapolate a Q3 result, and I think our PE will look much nicer. Plus, we are in the fintech space, right? So fintech space is what the market and expects us to be growing very fast, which we are doing. Only problem, to be frank, is we do have a baggage of being listed because I still need to balance my earnings, right? I can't go crazy in doing like what the likes of Grab and all doing that, just acquire market share. So we balance our earnings. But having said that, I believe we have grown very, very strongly, especially in our transaction volume and merchant acquisition, and while balancing our earnings for it. So I actually think we are undervalued based on our Q3 2020 results.
I'm sure your shareholders will be happy to hear that the CEO thinks that you're undervalued. The rest of us will have to wait and see how this plays out. But speaking of your shares, a few weeks ago, GHL had a 1-for-2 bonus issue that went ex earlier this month. Now, the standard company line when it comes to bonus issues is that it's to reward shareholders. But technically, nothing really happens to the value of the shareholder stock. They get more stock and liquidity improves, but the price corrects to reflect the change. What was behind the rationale here for the bonus issue, Danny?
To me, it's purely because of to improve liquidity. As we all know, it becomes quote-unquote a cheaper stock. So they'll be inviting more retail or even institutional to come in, purely to improve liquidity.
No, but you know, on that note of rewarding shareholders, has any thought around dividends come up instead? Your annual profit has tripled since 2015. Any plans to bring in a dividend policy to pass on some of that value back to shareholders?
At the moment, not yet. I think we're still at the growing stage, right? So we would like to plow the money back into the business to continue growing it. Hopefully in probably 4 or 5 years' time. But at the moment, the focus is to continue growing the company aggressively and by putting the money back in.
So on the note of growing aggressively, and earlier you mentioned your PE backers, private equity backers. So around 60% of GHL stock is held by Actis stock, which 39%, around 17% directly and indirectly by Simon Low, and Credor through Parantaka owns around 13%. What direction are you getting from the majority shareholders here in terms of the direction of the company? Because I'm sure they're thinking about their own exits.
I mean, my shareholders are PE or no PE, right? They are actually very business focused, right? They believe that a business needs to be solid rather than just news and noise to reflect into the share price and so that they can exit, right? So their message to me is basically, make sure we build a sustainable business, right? An aggressive, growing, sustainable business. So they believe that there's no shortcut. They believe that there's a lot of hard work, and only that hard work make things sustainable and would reflect better for the whole company and for themselves as well. Individually, they have their own different mandate, right? And that I'll leave it to them. So the idea here is basically purely on, if you ask me, on share price. But we are building a share price not just on news, we are building a share price on performance. And that is the most critical part.
Some of your major shareholders here, like Credor, for example, has its own investments in other products or even other parts of the financial ecosystem, like Citos, for example. Are you looking at partnerships with other affiliated or sister or sort of related companies that to bring synergy to the overall organization?
Very good point. We have already started doing that since March this year. Naturally, it's a quote unquote, they're not really sister company, but they are so-called associated shareholders, right? So yes, we are definitely working closely with them for actually both sides, some to our benefit as well as to their benefit. So pretty much very mutual benefit. And you're rightly pointing out the likes of CTOS, definitely work very closely with them because we actually cater for the similar customer segment as well. They do cater for the SME, for CTOS, as well as for the big banks. So we strategize a lot of things together. And some of the other investments, like Mr. DIY, as you probably know, we are also a merchant acquirer for them. So that's how the synergy comes. And that's what I like about our shareholders, right? They can contribute and they will always contribute.
Danny, on that note, I'd like to thank you for joining me today.
Pleasure. Always pleasure to come back. Thank you, Roshan.
I was speaking with Danny Leong, CEO of GHL Systems, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.